Talk about complaining today. And it's just kind of an interesting thing. The Dutch word for complain is brom. And a person who complains a lot is called a brompot. And interestingly enough, the slang word for motorcycle is bromfiets, or complaining wheels, which I always thought was kind of interesting. So what do you complain about? What are some of the things that you like to complain about, that you catch yourself complaining about? You know, I catch myself complaining about different things. TV ads always just frost my flakes. I can't stand it. I can't stand to watch commercial television because I can't stand the ads, especially the medical ads. And I think, you know, why are you spending all this money advertising? And why don't you spend it on research and development instead? And it turns out that most of the drug companies spend $4 on advertising for every dollar they spend on research and development, which, of course, I can't verify that, but that's what I've read in a few different places. And I complain about healthcare quite a bit, you know, because I've just gone through the checkups and I'm healthy. As my daughter says, I'm remarkably healthy for a man my age and with my obesity. So I don't like her anymore. You go in and the procedure is, you know, they want a list of your meds. Well, I don't know what meds I'm on. I just take the pills. And so I went to this little website and I printed it out, 3 copies. I used all 3 of them. I had to hand those out to the people doing the intakes. And, of course, I always have fun with the intakes because it's usually you get this relatively inexperienced person who doesn't quite know how to handle an old man with, different things to say. And then there's politics. Man, we hear complaints about politics. Doesn't matter if you're red or blue. It's lots of complaining goes on all the time. A few years ago, I ran across this book called A Complaint-Free World. And the guy's really got some good concepts in there. His name is Will Bowen. And what he does is he says you should wear these purple bracelets. And every time you complain, you move it to the other wrist. Now, these things are too small for me, so I just tried it today with just a regular rubber band because, you know, it makes my wrist sweat and it's all icky and everything. So I just do it. But I did order a few of these, and they're on the table back there by Ed. And feel free to pick one up and use them for that sort of thing. The purple bracelet does work. But, you know, when we complain, sometimes we try to balance that with what I call a toxic positivity. You know, it's a fake positivity that just doesn't work. But what does work is gratitude, of being thankful for all the things that you have. Because what it boils down to is this, that all complaints are ultimately against Jesus. So you feel like complaining, picture him on the cross, dying for you, dying in your place, and you're complaining about how he's running the universe. You're saying, well, I don't like the way you run the universe, so let's get with it here. But almost everyone complains about something. You know, we like to complain about our spouses. And as I was thinking about that, you know, lots of folks like to complain about their houses, too. They're either too big or too small, take too much utilities, the mortgage payment's too high. All these different things, you know, the grass has to be mowed, the trees have to be trimmed, all that stuff. People complain about houses. And then I found that this time of year, now this year's an exception because it hadn't cooled off yet, but you know, these little guys try to get into our houses. And I've seen people complain bitterly about mice. Now, I personally don't have a problem with mice because I make messes, you know, I drop crumbs on the floor. Mice like crumbs. I look at them as a cleanup crew. But that's not the case. My early days in South Dakota, I think I was a pastor for 2 months, and there's a cold snap, and a mouse just walked down the center aisle of the church. And I did my best to not say anything because I knew if I said something, there'd be a stampede. And you don't want to have those kind of stampedes. But, you know, in the church, I hear all kinds of complaints too. You know, my sermons are too long. Oh, no, they're too short. We actually had people leave this church because the sermons were too short. Amazing. So, well, I can make these last an hour and a half, but I think that'd be a minority that would appreciate that. I hear complaints, not enough Bible teaching or too much Bible teaching. And in this room, on the same Sunday, I can frequently hear it's too hot in here or it's too cold in here. But those two complaints are on the same Sunday. It's amazing how that works. And the big one is other people in the church aren't behaving the way I think they should behave. So you hear complaints about the behavior of other people. And then, you know, with my philosophy, I said, you know, I've got certain personal core values. One is everybody's equal at the foot of the cross. And it's amazing how many people, mostly from other churches, say you can't teach that. Is that I said that's one of my core values, and another one is there's never going to be a dress code in any worship service that I lead. And then they call me a liberal because I believe that. And sometimes there's even been people who've come in here and left because we're too conservative. So it just, you know, yeah, what? But what this complaining does, it doesn't matter what it's about, it does create a toxic environment. And ultimately, every complaint is against Jesus and how he runs the universe. And we have to think about that. You know, today we're going to look at how the Jews complained when they complained in the desert after they'd been liberated as slaves. It's a pretty amazing story. It's from Exodus chapter 16. And the people of Israel, the Jewish people, had been delivered from Egypt after 400 years of slavery. And they had to go through this wilderness to get to the land of Canaan, the promised land. And they saw some tough times in the desert. And so they complained about it. This is how the narrative goes. Then the whole community of Israel set out from Elim and journeyed into the wilderness of Sin between Elim and Mount Sinai. They arrived there on the 15th day of the second month, 1 month after leaving the land of Egypt. There too, the whole community of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. Now, some things that need to be explained about this. The wilderness of sin is not talking about sin as we think of sin in the English language. Sin is the root word for Sinai. And they just called it the wilderness of sin, but in Hebrew it doesn't mean the same thing as it does in English. And no one really knows what it means in Hebrew. It's just one of those words that they decided to locate the Sinai Peninsula, which you still read about today all the time. But it does not mean what the English word sin means. Now, this was 1 month after leaving the land of Egypt. I figured it out, or I looked it up, that it would take 148 hours of walking, if you walk 4 miles an hour, to get from Egypt to the land of Canaan. So that's 8 hours per day of walking. If you'd walk 8 hours, that would take 18.5 days. But it took them much longer because they had families, they had some livestock, they had, you know, tents, they had all this stuff to move, and it was over 100,000 of them. Now, these folks had seen the miracles happen. They had seen the plagues on Egypt that allowed them to be liberated from Egypt. And if you want to see a good movie rendition of this, check out the Prince of Egypt. I think I've watched that movie about 80 times. We have it on VHS. And when my twins were little, I had to sit and watch that with them many, many times. And it is a good rendition of the story that we're looking at today. Now, in this particular passage, the word complain, the Hebrew word for complain, is used 7 times. So it's kind of interesting. But here's how they whined about this. This is verse 3. If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt, they moaned. There we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all the bread we wanted. But now you have brought us into this wilderness to starve us all to death. So get the irony here. These people would rather die as slaves with access to food than face the challenges of going through a desert. The older translations call this, we sat around the flesh pots of Egypt. And my dad always liked that phrase. He said that, you know, the good jobs were like the flesh pots of Egypt. But it's interesting how these people quickly forgot that they were slaves. It's just like it never existed. Now we'd rather go back to Egypt and eat what we want. Instead of thinking that, yeah, they're going to a better place and they're going to be free. But first they had to get through the desert. So this verse says they moaned. The older translation says they murmured. But they wanted to go back to the good old days. But I'm old enough to know now that there's no such thing as the good old days. They just simply don't exist. But that's what, you know, the mind tends to do. We all have rose-colored rearview mirrors, and we tend to think that the past is better than the present. It's just another way to complain. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Look, I'm going to rain down food from heaven for you. Each day the people can go out and pick up as much food as they need for that day. I will test them in this to see whether or not they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they will gather food, and when they prepare it, there will be twice as much as usual." So here you have the whole Sabbath thing coming out, you know, where it says you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath, which is Saturday. And that's interesting because the Ten Commandments had not been given yet. Where the, you know, remember the Sabbath day was one of the commandments. But the custom was already in force. So that's just kind of an interesting detail. They were being sent food from heaven and given a test of simple obedience and a reminder that it is Yahweh, their name for God, who provides. And that was the test that they didn't really pass very well. So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "By evening you will realize it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. In the morning you will see the glory of the Lord because he's heard your complaints, which are against him, not against us. What have we done that you should complain about us?" They needed to realize it was the Lord, it was Yahweh who brought them out of Egypt, and that he heard their complaints. So Moses emphasized, says it a couple of times, the complaints are against him, not against us. And that's an important theme of this passage. And then he talks about the glory of the Lord, and that has been so misinterpreted. It comes from the Hebrew word kabod, and it means heaviness or significance. You know, it's kind of like that old 60s terms. There's a few of us who were around in the 60s. Remember how you used to say that? "Oh, that's really heavy, man. You know, far out and heavy." I might have even said that a few times. But that really captures the meaning here, the heaviness of the presence of God. Well, and then Moses added, "The Lord will give you meat to eat in the evening and bread to satisfy you in the morning, for he's heard all your complaints against him." What have we done? Yes, your complaints are against the Lord, not against us. Wow, complaints against the Lord. You know, I really changed my attitude about complaints if I think I'm complaining against the one who keeps my heart beating. Complaining against the one who created all this. Complaining against the one who sustains life. But they did that. Rather than seeking a solution, you know, rather than you state a problem and then seek a solution, their complaints were just whining, which shows a weakness of character. Instead of acknowledging the hardship and looking for a solution, it's just like you get a flat tire on the way home. You guys say, oh, this isn't fair, this isn't right, you know, on and on. Or just pray about it and change the tire. You know, that's the way it's intended to be, but that's not how they did it. Then Moses said to Aaron, announce this to the entire community of Israel. Present yourselves before the Lord, for he has heard your complaining. And as Aaron spoke to the whole community of Israel, they looked toward the wilderness. And they could see the awesome glory of the Lord in the cloud. See, there was a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. I found this online this week. I just like the picture. They saw the power of God, the glory, you know, this real heaviness. But you think about that. These people saw what God did in Egypt just a month before. All the plagues, all the things, getting their deliverance. And there they are complaining. Now, if God can turn water into blood and make it not drinkable, I just don't want to tick him off. You know, and you would think that that would be their thing too. I would be afraid to complain with that, but they did. So it goes on, here's verse 11. Then the Lord said to Moses, I've heard the Israelites' complaints. Now tell them, in the evening you'll have meat to eat, and in the morning you'll have all the bread you want. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God. So in other words, make no mistake of who is taking care of you. Who's keeping your heart beating? Who's keeping you breathing? And the narrative goes on like this. That evening, vast numbers of quail flew in and covered the camp. And the next morning, the area around the camp was wet with dew. When the dew evaporated, a flaky substance as fine as frost blanketed the ground. The Israelites were puzzled when they saw it. What is it? They asked each other. They had no idea what it is. Well, that's interesting. You know, you think the quail coming in. They're in the middle of the desert. They don't have any firewood. So how'd they eat the quail? They must have eaten it raw. And somehow raw quail just doesn't do it for me. But I suppose if you're hungry enough, you can do that. And then it talks about dew. Well, dew is rare in the desert. And so that, you know, you could see kind of a miraculous intervention just in the fact there was dew there. And then they said, well, what is this? This manna, this flaky substance on the ground. Interestingly, in Hebrew, if you want to ask, what is it? It's pronounced man'ah. So that's why it's called manna. It just comes from the Hebrew word. What did it look like? There's all kinds of speculation on that. I think it looked like cornflakes. Maybe that's because I'm from Iowa, but I think it looked like cornflakes. You know, every once in a while I have to have a cornflake fix. You know, I always keep a box of cornflakes in the cupboard. And my daughters rebuke me for that. They say, well, that's not very healthy for you. I say, oh, sure it is. I put a big bowl full of it, put about 4 teaspoons of sugar on it. And I don't use 2% milk. You know, it tastes much better with half and half. And then you've got yourself a meal, you know, that last sticks to your ribs for a while. So, and yes, I take Lipitor. So, you know, it's okay. And Moses told them, it is the food the Lord has given you to eat. These are the Lord's instructions. Each household should gather as much as it needs. Pick up 2 quarts for each person in your tent. Again, the emphasis is on the Lord, who they called Yahweh, who gives them food. So the people of Israel did as they were told. Some gathered a lot, some only a little. But when they measured it out, everyone had just enough. Those who had gathered a lot had nothing left over, and those who gathered only a little had enough. Each family had just what it needed. So here again, the Lord provided, even though they didn't trust him. And that sounds kind of familiar. So what does this say to you and me? It says we need to stop our whining and start trusting, to work with him. Instead of complaining about a problem, you state the problem and you look for a solution. is when you complain, it just irritates everybody who's listening to you complain. Instead, look for the solution. Complaining, bottom line, it shows a lack of trust in God. And it will block your spiritual growth. It creates a negative mindset. It strains your relationship with God. Instead, create a thankful heart and practice patience and trust. Align yourself with God's purposes and rely on faith, not feelings. You know, everybody in this room, it's extremely unlikely that you're all going to be happy all the time. It's just unrealistic to think that. We're not going to be happy all the time because we live in a broken world. It's likely, though, that if you work with God, you're going to find a way to solve your problems. This is echoed in the New Testament in several places. Perhaps the most clear is Philippians 2:14. Do everything without complaining and arguing. So, thinking about that this week, you know, it's a good idea. And I'm enjoying these Old Testament series. You know, I have never in my 4 decades of being a pastor, this is the first time I've ever used Exodus 16 on a Sunday morning. And as I was thinking about that, I had this really busy day planned, and this car wouldn't start. It made that noise of, you know, that, you know, when your battery's not working, it sounds like an old Hollander clearing his throat. You know, that's kind of how that sounded. But it happened on a day I was really busy, and so I had to cancel some things, and then I was really complaining. I couldn't find my jumper cables, which really was a good sign because I haven't used them in so long. But I got the car started. I jump-started it. I took it in for a new battery, and then that was the most painful part. It says $300, so you could tell I hadn't bought a battery in a while. Now, I could have been grateful. I could have handled this much better. I had that car 9 years. I bought it when it was 2 years old with 30,000 miles, and I've never had a lick of trouble with it. It's paid off. I should be grateful for that. I'm grateful that I could afford the battery. I'm grateful that it decided not to start in my garage rather than in a parking ramp in Chicago or something. But I realized, you know, I've really got it quite good. So I thanked God for my battery going out in the car. You know what? It makes all the difference in the world. It's way better to be grateful than to be grumbling. And let's believe this good news and live in peace. Now there's what's happening today, it's called World Communion Sunday, where denominations all across the world are celebrating this as a sign of unity. And it started in the 1930s by the Presbyterians, and it's just kind of caught on with many other churches. And one of the things that we can do today is just remember, you know, Jesus called himself the bread of life. And he referred to these Old Testament stories quite often. But he referred to himself as the bread of life, the manna that came down from heaven. And so today we want to remember that. As we celebrate this sacrament, let's remember what he did for us. That on the last night, the night before he was betrayed, he took the bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body which is broken for you." In the same way, at the end of the meal, he took the cup. And after he blessed it, he said, "This cup is a new covenant in my blood. As often as you drink of this, do so in remembrance of me." In the Reformed Church, I'm required to remind you that very fact, that this sacrament is about remembrance. It's about remembering what Jesus did for us. It's also about communion, how we commune with him in a special way through it. And it's about hope. And I was thinking about that this morning. Just during the first service, I thought, you know, this great hope that Jesus gives us that we'll be reunited with our loved ones eventually because of what he's done for us. And so when I was walking out after the first service, I turned around and looked at this little lectern. And I remember who made it. Ernie Dennison made this thing. And he's been gone a number of years now. But I miss Ernie. And it would be, you know, the promise of Jesus is that we'll see him again. And that makes it all worthwhile. So would you pray with me, please? Lord, today we come before you, going through this sacrament. We can't possibly imagine all that it means. But we ask that you bless us through it, that as we symbolically take the bread and the cup, we take you inside of us and welcome your presence in every moment of our lives. Amen.